Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants. This is Torture Cast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of your Golden State Warriors. That's right, the Warriors are world champs, and we all know that right now. And so the Bay has two teams in the Bay Area now defending titles, which is pretty freaking sweet. I know a lot of you may not be Warriors fans exactly, but if you're from the Bay Area, you might as well be, because it's the only basketball team we have in our midst. You know, we have our rivalries between the Giants and the A's, the 49ers and the Raiders, and of course the Sharks. You know, this year they didn't even make the playoffs for the first time like in 10 years. But the Warriors are definitely a team that kind of bridges the gap in the entire Bay. So congratulations to them. They had the parade today in Oakland, which is actually pretty cool to see, even though that they are going to, at least it looks like, eventually move to San Francisco. I think it was great that they had the parade in Oakland and not San Francisco, even though San Francisco may be a better venue. Oakland is definitely where the roots are at. So congrats to the Warriors. I'm a huge fan, not as big, not even close to as big as the Giants. I've played baseball all my life. I just love the game so much, but you know, definitely played a little basketball in my day, and I love following them. So never thought I'd see a Warriors title in my life, being 41 years old, but again, I also didn't think I would see a Giants title, let alone three, in my life. So never say never, I guess. So go Niners again, although I have seen several titles, five, in fact, in my lifetime, and go Sharks, who have never won a title, but not so bad. So my co-hosts are not here tonight. Eric might have been able to join, but he had something that held him up. But he's actually a Chicago guy, even though he's a Giants fan number one. As far as hockey goes, he is a Blackhawks fan, so it's been a pretty good week for TorchCast hosts, being that Ben and Willie are also Warriors fans, but Eric being a Blackhawks fan, they just had their parade yesterday, I believe. They won a few nights ago. The NHL Cup, the Stanley Cup, and of course the Warriors put away the Cavaliers in six games, so pretty sweet, pretty sweet. But we're here to talk about the Giants, and we haven't podcasted in a while, so I wanted to get one in the can. The Giants right now are actually going into L.A. In fact, first pitch, as I record, is only about 35 minutes away down in Los Angeles against the Bums. But I just want to talk a little bit about how they've been doing a little bit lately. Not so great. They've been stumbling, just like I've been speaking. They're 6-12 in their last 18. And, of course, they started the season 4-10. You think that's a pretty shitty team, right? Well, in between, I like to call the season sandwich, with the bread being those two poor records, the meat of the sandwich is actually very, very good, and that's usually what we like to dine on anyway. They went 26-10 in the middle part of the season, and right now they're only 2.5 back, so they're clearly in striking distance. They're way back from where they were at this point last year, but we all know they started that incredible season, 42-21, and eventually faded, so hopefully the June swoon will not continue, although it has been a bit of a June swoon. They do lead. This is really interesting, though. The Giants lead all of Major League Baseball in road average with a .284 clip. That's 12 points higher than the next team. They also lead MLB in on-base percentage and slugging percentage. So you think, well, this team's got to be in first place, right? They got to be right up there with the Cardinals. But alas, no, their home record isn't so good. Of course, they lost 9 in a row recently. They did win their last game of the homestand, but that's not so good. Their road record, which is the best in the National League, by the way, at 19-14, is a lot better than their home record. So that's something that really needs to turn around. I mean, if you think that if the Giants could have been a few games above 500 at home right now, I think they're one game below 500, by the way, the Giants would actually be in first place right now. So hopefully they can turn that around. But nine games in a row at home. I mean, that was the first nine-game losing streak since they lost nine in a row, or I guess 10 in a row, at the Polo Grounds in 1940. I think gas was 18 cents a gallon. In my recent article, I kind of wrote up some interesting stats there. My grandmother, who lived in France at the time, she's French, she hadn't even been incarcerated yet by the Nazis, so she had yet to fight against the SS and those horrible people there. So gives you kind of a perspective on how long it's been since the Giants have actually lost nine in a row at home. A few other things I wanted to talk about. This is going to be a kind of a short podcast. So the All-Star game, this is really interesting. Obviously, Bruce Bochy is going to be managing the National League starters, but the American League ballot has absolutely been stuffed by Kansas City fans. As of today, well, I guess a few days ago, because they release these votes once a week, the Royals had eight out of the nine starters, including their second baseman, who is, as of right now, the worst batter in all of Major League Baseball. And Jose Altuve, who is a quarter of a million votes behind him, of course, is a very worthy person. But, I mean, it's clear that the Royals fans are stuffing the ballots, but today Major League Baseball actually took unprecedented measures. Well, I should take that back. It's not really unprecedented. They say they cancel about 20 to 30% of votes every year. It's just that we don't hear about it, which I found interesting. I thought that was actually kind of more the major news story than what's going on right now. But they have a crack team of people who look for inconsistencies and maybe people who are hacking the system, if you will, by stuffing the ballots, or have, you know, bots going in using scripts to create a new email and vote 35 times, create a new email, vote 35 times, that kind of thing. Well, apparently that is actually happening with some people in Kansas City. I have no fault with the fans who are actually voting legitimately. I don't. I mean, look, the rules are the rules, and the Royals fans can vote as they wish. And if other teams' fans don't vote accordingly, well, the Royals are going to dominate the All-Star ballot. But I think in this case, it is a little suspect when you see all eight or eight out of the nine going to be starting. In fact, in a perfect world, I would actually like to see the Giants fans do the same thing through nefarious means, of course, because that would be the best. You know, stick it to the man. That's what I keep hearing from Royals fans. And actually, part of me kind of agrees with it, because I don't really like the whole All-Star voting regimen. I think fans should have a say in the vote, but I don't think they should have 100% in the say of the vote, because there are people who are left off every year that you kind of go, really? Well, maybe not just left off, but at least not starting. But this year is pretty embarrassing. And a lot of the Royals players are like, yeah, well, yeah, this guy should be starting over me. This guy should be starting over me. But it is what it is. It's not their fault. It's not Ned Yost's fault. It's not the management's fault, even though they're promoting the team. They're promoting the team just like any other team would. But the fact of the matter remains that Major League Baseball canceled 60 million votes today. So I don't think we know exactly how that's going to turn out in the next release of votes, but it'll be interesting to see how it changes from 8 to 7, 6, 5, 4. I don't know. Clearly, the Royals, I think, even with vote cancellations, are going to have at least four starters. That's my guess. Maybe even five. It's going to be pretty dominated. I mean, we've seen this in the past with the Yankees and the Red Sox and other teams, so it's not unprecedented, but pretty interesting stuff. I would like to see if the Giants could stuff the ballot box. Just basically a rematch of last year's World Series for the first three innings. Why not? You know, let's see what happens. Especially since both Yost and Bochy are going to be the managers, so it'd be a pretty perfect story. But I kid. No, we really need the best players in there. And since it actually does count for home field advantage in the World Series, there is a little bit of weight added to this, despite the fact that the Giants did not have home field advantage last year and they still won it. So I want to talk about Pablo Sandoval. I had a post a little bit ago, maybe a week or two ago, about the comparison between him and Duffy, but that's not what I want to talk about right now. What I do want to talk about is the fact that he's very active in social media, which I actually really like when players are, because I think it gives the fans and the media a bit of a peek into their world. It's just that sometimes they can go overboard and kind of screw themselves. And unfortunately, I think that Pablo's social media activity is actually going to dip a little bit. because in the game 2 days ago, he actually had to go to the bathroom. So what do most guys do, and probably girls, although I can't speak from experience, he picked up his phone and went in the shitter and went ahead and opened up Instagram and started liking pictures of hot girls. So that's a no-no. Major League Baseball policy stipulates that you cannot, players cannot, use their phones or be active on social media, I should say, during a game. And that was right during the game. In fact, they were losing at the time. So that was pretty pretty shitty, pardon the pun, for Pablo to do that. And obviously, people called him out. Major League Baseball was a little pissed off, and the manager suspended him for a game. And what does he do tonight? He goes out and he goes, I think he was 3 for 3 at last I checked. So we'll see what happens with Pablo. But at this point, I don't think Giants fans should be upset about the Giants not re-signing him for various reasons, mostly because of how Matt Duffy has really picked up the slack and the fact that they're saving a ton of cash that they can use later for someone else. If they have someone equivalent to Pablo, I think that's a win-win, but also for the social distractions as well. Another thing that happened, Marco Scudero, he, you know, of course, was MVP in the 2012 playoffs in the NLCS. The iconic video and image of him, you know, drinking in the rain after Game 7 or in the ninth inning of Game 7 at AT&T Park when they were just about to defeat the Cardinals to move on to the World Series. And, of course, he even drove in the winning run, of course, against the Tigers in the 10th inning at Comerica Park. He was an All-Star in 2013, but, of course, he signed through this year, 2015. And, unfortunately, his back was acting up, and in 2014 he only had, I believe, 11 at-bats or so. He had one hit, and they shut him down. And I think most people still thought he would come back at some point, even if it was in a limited role, like a bench player. But alas, he's actually fighting for his physical well-being. He's rehabilitating, as they say, quote, to be comfortable in life. And when you hear that, you realize he's got a serious issue. He had surgery to fuse 2 vertebrae in his lower back, and he's still dealing with a lot of pain and limited mobility. So he's clearly not ever going to play baseball again. And the Giants, of course, DFA'd him a while back. No one, of course, is going to re-sign him. So they did re-sign him to a contract where he wasn't put on the 40-man roster so they could leave that space off. But now he can retire as a Giant. So I think that was symbolically a really nice gesture by the Giants, and Marco took it. So it's great to see such a swell guy to retire as a Giant, and hopefully we'll see a little bit more of him. I don't know if it's going to be in the media or if he's just going to go, you know, right off into the sunset and we'll barely hear from him again except for the 10-year reunion at AT&T Park, you know, that kind of thing. But all the best to Marco Scudero. And normally, you know, even last year, I think during a few podcasts, I would have said that the Giants are screwed not having a second baseman like Marco Scudero. But the fact of the matter is that Joe Panik has really picked up all of that slack and some, and he has been an incredible replacement at second base. So the Giants miss him as a person, but so far they haven't missed him too much as a player and numbers. So congratulations, Marco Scudero. Glad you can retire a Giant, and good luck with getting back to being able to just enjoy life with your family into retirement. So since it's been a couple of weeks since we recorded, in fact, 2.5 weeks, because we had a power outage, I do the recording, and unfortunately the power went out of my house, and we just couldn't align the schedule, so that's kind of one of the reasons I'm actually doing a solo podcast right now. But I want to talk a little bit about older news that we missed over the last 2.5 weeks. First of all, Chris Heston, 4th no-hitter in 4 years. Apparently this is going to be an annual thing for the Giants, but he pitched a no-hitter against the New York Mets, and that was so much fun to watch. In fact, that was during the finals, I think Game 3 maybe, Game 4 maybe, and it was just fantastic to see that, flipping back and forth, doing a little picture-in-picture. But to see him dominate, including the ninth inning, I mean, there, aside from Crawford's grab, there wasn't anything that really should have been a hit or could have been a hit without an incredible defensive play. In fact, he struck out the side in the ninth. And I was joking on Twitter that I don't know if I'd call it a no-hitter because he hit 3 guys. But, you know, a lot of people said, oh, if he didn't hit those 3 guys, it would have been a perfect game. Well, if he didn't hit those three guys, I mean, maybe he would have walked them. Maybe they would have gotten base hits. Maybe it would have been the butterfly effect and other guys would have gotten base hits. So regardless, he got the no-hitter. I think that's pretty much all we cared about because I think he hit his first guy in the third or fourth inning anyway. So it was long gone. But congratulations to Chris Heston. I think he had a nice glass of scotch the night after that he pitched that. I mean, that's just got to be an incredible feeling. No matter where his career goes from now, he can always remember that as one of the pinnacle moments of his career, along with having a World Series ring from last year. The Giants also, when they went out to Philadelphia a couple of weeks ago, visited the White House for the third time in 5 years and got to visit with President Obama, which was absolutely fantastic. It's kind of becoming old hat now. In fact, the Warriors are going to do that now next year or later this year. I don't know when they go, but the Bay Area teams are actually visiting the White House now with frequency to the point where maybe they should move the White House to the Bay Area. So congratulations again to the Giants for another White House visit. Hopefully, a lot of people think that visiting the White House is a little bit of a curse for the Giants. And, of course, right after they did visit Obama, they haven't been doing so well since then. But, I mean, clearly that's not the case. It's just coincidence. They're in a little bit of a doldrums right now. Also, the Giants had the amateur draft. I shouldn't say amateur draft. The Major League Baseball draft. And they picked up right-handed pitcher Phil Bickford and first baseman Chris Shaw. And I've seen mixed reviews. Some people giving him a kind of a C or D grade. Some people giving him a B or B plus. It is interesting that, you know, the Giants have always been loaded with pitchers. And I think they have Tyler Beede down there in the minor leagues at Richmond, I believe. And they have other guys in the system. Phil Bickford is another guy you could throw like 99 miles per hour. But he had a little bit of a marijuana issue there. But, you know, just to be honest, who hasn't? So nothing too major, not performance-enhancing drugs. In fact, that's probably a performance-de-enhancing drug. But regardless, the Giants overlooked that, obviously, and signed him. So hopefully he won't be partaking of the illegal substances in the future. And then power-hitting Chris Shaw, which actually they got as a compensatory draft pick last year. So hopefully that will be something that the Giants can rely upon in the future. Also, they brought back up Casey McGee, who we thought was gone. But again, since we haven't recorded in a while, there apparently was a bit of an issue where he cleared waivers, came back, and actually had an option left. So they could demote him to AAA. But he is back with the club right now. And I'm not going to say he's doing well, but at least it was something that we thought was over with. And it's not. So he's back with the club. And he's proven valuable before. Last year, he was the comeback player of the year. You know, he hit 280 whatever and drove in 75 runs. I mean, the guy definitely has talent. It's just he even admitted when he was demoted that being back in the, you know, with the team that he rooted for as a kid, being a Santa Cruz boy, was really difficult, and he put a lot of pressure on himself. And so I'm hoping that the demotion, the release, and the re-signing maybe kind of straightens his perspective on life, and he can just treat the Giants as, look, this is my job, this is what I need to do. Obviously, if I was talented enough to play Major League Baseball and I signed with the Giants, I'm certain undergo the exact same thing. I'm sure I would actually perform better for the Dodgers than the Giants, given everything equal, just because of the pressure I would put on myself. But he's back, so hopefully he can contribute in a meaningful way. So something interesting that's happening or will happen here soon is that Matt Cain and Jake Peavy are kind of winding up their rehabilitation stints in AAA, and both of them are actually doing pretty well. In fact, Peavy went over 100 pitches his last start. Cain was about at 75, but he's throwing 93, 94 miles an hour, which is very, very good. His velocity is there. His control, he said, is there. The only thing that's not there is the stamina, so he, you know, probably will have one or two more starts. Peavy can only have one more start before his 30-day injury clock expires. But both of them are going to be coming up about the same time to the big club, and they will be on the 25-man roster. The question is, what do we do with the current roster? And there's a lot of theories out there, and I'm not going to go through all of them, but I will say this. They just brought up that kid, not Blackford, I'm forgetting his name right now, He's a reliever right now with the Giants. They're probably going to send him back down. Obviously, he has many of options. So does Hunter Strickland. They needed the extra arm, and he's had flashes of brilliance. For the most part, he's actually done a very good job because he hasn't faced, you know, Bryce Harper since he's been back up. But he's been working on being a little bit less reliant on just his 98-mile-an-hour heater. He's throwing curveballs and off speeds and other pitches to mix it in. I think psychologically he's realized that these are major league hitters. He can't blow them all away like he could down in AAA. But I do think those are two candidates to be sent down. Now, they still have a five-man rotation, so what do they do with the rotation? I think if you look up the rotation, if you have Bumgarner, Kane, and Peavy as three of them, in no particular order, you have to look at Tim Lincecum and Ryan Vogelsong and Chris Heston. And those are the three that are going to be in play. Now, for the last two, what would you do? And that's going to be a difficult decision. I think they're probably going to... Oh, sorry, and Hudson too as well. Now, Hudson's a veteran. He's 39 years old. He's retiring after this year. They're not going to demote him to the bullpen. In fact, I've read a lot of articles saying that he's not even equipped to do that. He's never done it in his life. So I think you have to lock in those four. So the fifth spot comes down to Vogelsong, Heston, and Lincecum. It's a little bit of a tough choice. You got Timmy, who we love. He's in the last year of his contract. He started the season absolutely fantastic. He was pretty good his last start, but he had a pretty rough patch there with over almost a 6 ERA. So he's someone who's also used to the bullpen. He's someone who's been very inconsistent the last 3 years. I hate to say it, but I think he's an ideal candidate to go back to the bullpen. Ryan Vogelsong is the other guy that I think is going to be demoted to the bullpen, only because he started the season in the bullpen. He realized he may not be signed by anyone, but he was glad to be re-signed by the Giants. And furthermore, even though he started the season horribly, then he had those three incredible starts in May, then he had another two or three stinkers, and I mean, he was just bombed. And then he goes out in Seattle 2 nights ago and pitches 6 2/3 innings with shutout ball, 3 hits, with the last two coming his last two batters. So the problem with him is that even though he shows these flashes of brilliance, he's never been, quote, that dominant pitcher. He's never been a Matt Cain. And I'm not going to say Jake Peavy is dominant now, but over the second half of last season, Jake Peavy was pretty damn dominant before the playoffs. And because of that inconsistency, despite his overall numbers, which aren't horrible, they're not good, but they're not horrible, I think it's the inconsistency that's going to drive Vogelsong back to the pen as well. So I think both of them will reluctantly accept that assignment. And I think Chris Heston's going to stay. I think he has been a little bit more consistent, not totally consistent. We all know this. He goes from giving up 6 runs to a no-hitter to then giving up another 3 runs the next start. Don't get me wrong, but his overall numbers are still better than Ryan Vogelsong. They're not necessarily better than Timmy, but I think because of the track record that Timmy brings the last 3 years and his experience in the bullpen and his effectiveness in the bullpen, I think they will demote him and keep Heston. Now, that being said, I think it's open for either one of those two guys to move right back up to the starters. I think in the next month, clearly, one of the starters get hurt. I think clearly Heston could just absolutely shit the bed and he'll be either demoted to AAA or to the bullpen, probably AAA at that point. And if they did that, they'd probably bring back up Strickland to be the, you know, seventh inning kind of guy. But I think that's kind of where it's going to go. I don't really see any other options. It's funny because a lot of people say the Giants have a tough decision. But again, these tough decisions are actually kind of a good thing to have in the long run. So it's going to be really interesting over the next week or two to see how the Giants management is going to handle this. All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and wrap this sucker up, but we got a few things to talk about, including our traditional new favorite guy, and I'm going to go ahead and say it, Matt Duffy. I mean, this dude, despite having a fat cat called Skeeter, he's just a gamer. He's about 170 pounds soaking wet, but he's got 6 or 7 bombs this year. He's out hitting Panda by a mile. He's out defending him by a mile, and he is just fun to have in the lineup, and he's one of those guys where you can bat 7th or 8th. He doesn't care. He doesn't care. I mean, he hasn't earned the right to hit third or sixth or second or anything like that. And they don't have a place for that yet. But he really lengthens the lineup. And I think that's the operative word. He's not a giveaway out in the seventh or eighth place. So I think Duffy himself has absolutely ascended to a role where he's going to be kept the rest of the year. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. He's clearly better than McGee at this point. They have no other options. He's going to be with his big league club the entire year. And I'm so happy for the dude. I think he's such a nice guy. I interviewed him last year after he had one of those it wasn't a game-winning hit, but it was a hit that extended the Giants' lead. And he was surprised we even had a chance to interview him. He had never really done that before. He's a little bit more used to that now. But he's truly a genuine person, and I'm really excited for him. So he's my new favorite guy. So someone we should hate upon. I'm going to just say Dodgers fans in general, not just because the Giants are playing the Dodgers, although that's nice and coincidental, but because there was a recent article on Fox Sports, which I have here. Let me bring it up. And it was the 10 things that Los Angeles Dodgers fans can't stand about the San Francisco Giants. And it was just fun to read. It's a little Schadenfreude, if you will. I just love taking enjoyment out of the pain and suffering of others, as long as it's not too painful. But I'm going to go ahead and go through this list real quickly. So number one reason, it's actually really number 10, but they list it in this order. Number one, the color origin. The color orange. So they say it's repugnant to be kind. The mere sight of it, no matter the shade, no matter the reason, initiates visceral reactions among Dodgers fans. If you were to consume a large bag of Cheetos, a block of sharp cheddar cheese, and a gallon of Hi-C, and then force yourself to throw that all up, you'd have the raw ingredients needed to make a Giants jersey. Disgusting. So, I love it. Because my whole office and half my closet is basted in orange. The pretentious beat LA chants. Of course, they claim that, you know, the Boston Celtics originated this chant. And although that might be true, it's way more applicable to Giants fans right now. So, granted, if there was like a beat SF chant, I'd hate it too. Next one, the shot we'd all like to forget. Well, we as Giants fans love to remember, but of course, Bobby Thompson's home run. They give kudos to it, but they still hate it. Any mention of that cheater Barry Bonds? Well, I think that's pretty much all of baseball, to be honest. And even half of Giants fans are so happy to what he's done. But they specifically point out the pirouette after a home run he hit back in 1997. But other than that, whatever, Barry Bonds. Number five, Smiling Joe Morgan. Of course, he crushed their playoff hopes on the last day of the season back in 1982 when he hit a home run to defeat the Dodgers. So they hate him. Juan Marichal, mostly because of the brawl that he had where he took a bat to Dodgers catchers Rosebro in a 1965 brawl. And, you know, he bloodied him up a little bit, but they do say that they made up and everything's cool, but they still hate him for that. I don't hate him for that. The fact that they stole the Bulldog, I thought this was funny to be even on the list. Hershiser was barely with the Giants, and apparently they thought it was complete insult that one of their icons actually signed with the Giants. Even though they can't blame the Giants, it was Orel's own decision to do so. But they still hate the Giants for their own guy being a traitor, essentially. Jeffrey Leonard, of course. They hate the fact that he circled the bases with one flap down. Again, specifically to the Dodgers, I think most teams probably hated that. And number nine, this quote from Daryl Strawberry. This was basically an article that was way back in the day when he left L.A. to play for the Giants. He said, quote, playing in L.A. was a huge letdown after a decade in New York. The sports atmosphere in New York was insane and intense, and that was what I was used to. In Dodger Stadium, fans were much more, you know, Californian. Laid back, drifted into the park late, filtered out early. They had no fire, no passion. When you got a hit, they gave you a smattering of polite applause. When you struck out, they were like, ah, bummer, man. Better luck next time. It was, to be honest, boring. Again, they hate the Giants for that. Seems like a stretch for this list. And then, of course, number one or number 10, depending on your opinion, their insanely good fortune. The Giants have won 3 World Series in the last 5 years, and they basically are like, nah, F you. F you. We don't like this. There's just no comeback for this, though, they admit. The recent run of success is the envy of the entire baseball world, not just the Dodgers. So pretty funny list. What are you going to do with it? I think you take it, put it in your back pocket, flaunt it around, saying, yep, I'm a Giants fan. Suck it. What are you going to do? All right, and so why are we going to win it all? Well, Eric did have a submission from last week, and he said that Don Mattingly will do something to screw it up for L.A., and yeah, typically Don Mattingly does that, so we'll see what kind of managerial mistakes he'll make to go ahead and screw that up, even if they win the West and play the Cardinals again in the playoffs. But, you know, what's really interesting about this is that both the Dodgers and other teams have actually started patterning their signings and drafts around the Giants, not to be built necessarily to win the regular season, but to be built to win in the playoffs, not having overpowering pitchers, but pitchers who know how to pitch in pressure situations, not having a lot of home run hitters, but having hitters who know how to hit in situations, know how to move the ball along, move the runner along, station to station, base hit after base hit, walk after walk, clutch it after clutch it in the playoffs. And that's what the Giants have done no matter how many teams they have played. And there's been 10 teams they've played. Well, should say 10 times because it's been the Cardinals twice, I guess. But 10 different times they've played 10 teams in the last three playoffs, be it in a 7, a 5, or a 1-game series, being the Pirates. They have defeated all 10. All 10. And a lot of these teams, in fact, all of the teams were favorites in the series. Every single one of them, the Giants have been the underdogs. And Vegas still doesn't understand that. Not that Vegas sets the line. They do set the initial line, but then, of course, bettors can control that. Even the bettors don't understand the magic that the Giants have had over the last three playoff runs. So I guess, you know, look, if you're at the roulette table and you see red hit 3, 4, 5, 6 times in a row, you're thinking, well, crap, there's no way it's going to hit a 7th time, an 8th time, a 9th time in a row, right? I'm going to bet on black. And I think that's part of it. I think it started out with the Giants aren't good, the Giants aren't good, the Giants aren't good, the Giants aren't good, this team is better, you know, the Tigers are better, the Rangers are better, the Cardinals are better. All these teams are better. And while that might be true on paper, I understand those picks in the beginning. But as the Giants started to win every single series, I thought that things would change in the media, but they didn't. And I wonder if part of that had to do with the fact that they thought that their luck would run out at some point. Like, oh, these guys can't win again. There's no way they can win again. Can they win again? No, they can't win again. They can't beat this team. They can't beat the Pirates. They can't beat the Cardinals again. They can't beat the Reds. They can't beat the Rangers. They can't beat Detroit, who has the best lineup in the last 30 years. Oh, we swept them, by the way. It's just really, really interesting. But one thing to note about things like roulette is that those things are independent events. What I mean is that if you flip a coin and you hit heads 5 times in a row, let me ask you this. Does that 6th flip have any better chance of hitting heads or tails than the previous flip or the previous 5 flips? No. They're independent events. And although that might not be completely true because we are dealing with momentum and human psychology and all of those things, maybe that's a reason why it's dependent in the sense of the Giants aren't going to lose because they've won 3 series in a row or 6 series in a row or 8 series in a row. Maybe it's because they have so much confidence it actually snowballs in their favor. And the fact that the Giants have all this confidence and experience and will to win. So I'm saying that playoffs, of course, are not independent events, although they can be to a certain degree. If any dependency relies upon you voting against or predicting against the Giants, I think that's a misnomer. I think if you still have a good portion of the roster on these playoff teams that were on previous playoff teams, I think that just feeds into their confidence. So it's pretty interesting, although I will admit, if the Yankees won 3 World Series in a row like they did back in the late 90s and into to the 2000s, I still would have bet against them because I'm like, oh, these guys have got to lose. So I'm trying to get into the psyche of how people understand and think of how playoff baseball is going to go. But anyway, the Giants have done an amazing job. They're 2.5 back of the Los Angeles Dodgers going into a 3-game series tonight. They're not going to have Mad Bum pitching, but of course the Dodgers are also not going to have Kershaw or Greinke going. So it's going to be a very interesting series. The Giants are 7-2 against the Dodgers this year. They're 6-0 at home. And of course their last sweep was a shutout sweep at AT&T Park. They are 1-2 against the Dodgers this year in Dodger Stadium. So even if the Giants lose 2 out of 3, it's not the end of the world. They'd only lose one game, be 3.5 back. Hoping for them to take 2 out of 3, starting it off with a nice Hesto Presto performance tonight. And hopefully they can gain a game on the Dodgers. I'm not expecting a sweep in L.A., although that would be nice. Hopefully they can pull within a game and a half, head back home, get things right at AT&T Park. We'll see what happens. So that's going to kind of do it for the TorchCast. If you have not checked out the site recently, Willie Dills has done a couple of interviews. He did attend one game in the press box with one important guest, Justin Robert Young, otherwise known as Jury from Night Attack. He's kind of a little bit of an internet B celebrity, so he's a huge Pirates fan, and they attended a Pirates game together, so that was a lot of fun to listen to. Very short podcast. And also, he did an interview, I believe, with the San Francisco Giants subreddit coordinator or manager or whatever you want to call it. I'm not into the whole Reddit thing, so check that out as well. You can follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook. In fact, we're very close to 1,000 likes, so push us over the edge. We're going to be attending a lot more games coming here into the future on their next homestand. Real excited as the Giants head into the All-Star break. You can follow me individually at ChadK21. You can also follow Willie Dills at Willie Dills. You can follow Eric Nathanson at 2OutHits and Ben Fried Lee at Fried Duck. So for the absent Ben, Willie, and Eric, this is Chad King signing off on episode 88, by the way. Forgot to mention that at the beginning. The Warriors Blue and Gold Championship episode. We'll see you next time. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TorchCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TorchCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TorchCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.